Hello, this is Jessica Bordolo, Young Adult Ministry Consultant, and we are continuing our conversation with Dr. Charles Arend, Professor at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis.
And I think along the way, I've come to realize that there are a lot of questions that we as Christians need to think about biblically that I never stopped to think about before. For example, why did God give us five senses? He gave us five senses to interact with the full spectrum of phenomena in the world, the smell of lilac bushes or roses, the sight of mountains, the sound of birds or wolves, the touch of grass or sand beneath our feet. And that's simply part of what it means to be a human creature. I mean, people talk about something called sensory deprivation, that if you put someone in isolation cell, I mean, you go crazy. By nature as creatures, we need to interact with the world, and we do that through our senses. Another question that I think is important is, why did God give us a sense of beauty? You know, what role does beauty play in the Bible? The beauty of creation, the beauty of God. How beauty moves us. When I look at a lot of non-Christian environmentalists, and I keep asking myself, well, so why do they care? Why are they devoting all this attention to preserving this ecosystem or this species? A lot of times, they come back to the question of beauty, to preserve something of beauty, the beauty, and that if we lose it, we're losing something of ourselves. So, you know, the Old Testament talks actually a fair amount about beauty. The beauty of creation, the beauty of God. I think more work needs to be done in that area. I don't have all the answers yet. Another area I think that deserves more work is in the area of our connection to creation through eating and food. God made us from the earth. When we eat food, we're consuming the earth. The health of the earth is related to our health through the health of that food. So we're bonded to the earth through food and frankly to each other. Again, even through the Bible, think of the role that food plays in community. Producing food, preparing food, eating food, people coming together to celebrate around food, now whether it's families or communities, the various feasts in the Bible are oriented around the issue of food. And for that matter, the Lord's Supper. So that food binds us to the earth, it binds us to one another as well. And when we come to, I think Wendell Berry put it this way, when we come to see food as no more than fuel, you know, we go through drive-in food, you know, it's like fill her up, you know, and off we go. You know, so that's another area I think that deserves some attention. The area of economics. How we produce, consume, ties into stewardship. You know, how do we take care of everything on earth so that everything flourishes? And, you know, is consuming how we define ourselves, our identity? Am I what I buy? Or is the richness of life to be found not only in community with each other, but again, so Wendell Berry, one of my favorites, made the observation that once material sufficiency is met, our basic necessities of food and clothing, he said, life itself, which is a membership in the living world, is already in abundance. Life itself, which is membership in the living world, is already in abundance. And where did God first encounter Adam and Eve, and where did they encounter him?
In a garden.
In the garden. Well, maybe it's not all that unnatural that when we are outside, that we experience a sense of our own humility. We experience perhaps even a sense of something bigger than ourselves, something transcendent. Well, maybe that's an echo. Encountering God's handiwork, we encounter, wow, I didn't make this. I would never have dreamed of making this. We encounter something of his work in creation. We're encountering him through his works in a certain sense. Now, I'm not going to say that's the only place we encounter God. That's only getting part of the story. To get the full story, you need to know the story about God encountering us in Jesus Christ and in his work. But we can't exclude this one either. So, you know, this topic, I think young people are really onto something by being interested in this topic, because it is giving us eyes to see things in Scripture that we've overlooked, things that we've perhaps passed over in reading the Bible with a more of a narrow lens.
Like what? Give me some examples.
Questions like, for what purpose did God create other animals? Simply for my own use? Adam and Eve didn't need animals for food or clothing, seemingly in Genesis 1. And then you have in Job 38 to Job 40, God delighting in the wild animals. So there seems to be God delights in creatures simply because he made them, even though they may serve no human purpose or use. And I'm thinking like emperor penguins. I mean, you know, the males sit with the eggs on their feet for months at a time through the worst howling, cold, wintry winds, and then they waddle for miles down to the ocean to get their food. Like, who would have thought? Or God talks about, look at the silly ostrich laying its egg on the ground and it might get trampled or whatever. No human engineer would have come up with creatures like these. You know, so you start seeing things like that and asking new questions. Like I say, for what purpose did God create us? What purpose did he create animals? Why is every part of the earth sort of filled with different creatures? And then, you know, you think of the story of Noah. Yeah, we all know the story of Noah in terms of saving two of every kind. But then I never really realized how God made a covenant, and not only with Noah and his family, but with every living creature. Or then even the New Testament. Mark 1:13, Jesus went out to be with the angels, to be tempted by the devil, and then to be with the wild beasts. Well, with the wild beasts, what's that mean? To fight them, to tame what? Well, when you realize that in Isaiah has prophecies, I think Isaiah 34, certainly Isaiah 11, where he describes the Messianic age as this new age of harmony between humans and non-human creatures, and between, say, the wolf and the lamb, or that maybe Mark is saying this is the dawn of the Messianic age. Jesus goes out to be with the wild beasts, to be at peace with them in a sense. And that's what marks the Messianic age, the starting of the new creation. So there are those kinds of things along the way. Or we mentioned Romans 8 before, that creation groans under its bondage to corruption and yearns for its freedom. That there's this sequence that God first created the earth and he created human beings. We made a mess of things. So to restore everything, God has to begin where the mess was made. So Jesus comes, restores human creatures, makes us children of God. And then when we're revealed in glory, then creation will be set free from its bondage. So those kinds of things.
An increased importance in the physical world. And sometimes we pay attention to.
Yeah, I think we have a real opportunity to... And in one way, I want to say it's always been there, a Lutheran theology of seeing the physical creation as a good creation, but it's embracing it and developing it in sort of a robust way of what that means in terms of how we think of ourselves. And I think of myself not simply as the soul is the better part of me, but I'm the total package, body and soul together. And then embracing my interconnections and interdependence with the earth. I mean, take away the water we drink, the air we breathe, the food we die. And then what the other creatures on this earth, the ecology has taught us, contribute towards giving us fresh air and fresh water. And embracing that, and one just can't help but marvel at the generosity and the marvelous creation of God.
In doing this study, did you find that you changed in any way?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jessica. I'd have to say yes. I came at it with certain assumptions because, you know, the distinction between the creator and creation, you don't want to confuse that. affirming the goodness of creation, affirming our distinctiveness made in the image of God. But then to discover and think about our common creatureliness with other creatures. I think in terms of perhaps I've changed, I've begun changing in terms of even how we live, my wife and I, beginning with simply taking time to notice and delight in God's creation. You know, sometimes you get such busy schedules and you're simply focused on making a living and getting the kids through school. One can be kind of myopic or myopic. But to disregard and not pay attention to everything that God has made doesn't seem right either. He made it all, enjoy, delight in it. But that then takes time, you know, and that's raised some questions for me about what it means to live out the Sabbath. I think one can interpret the Sabbath, God rested on the seventh day, declared it was out very good. God sort of sat back and said, yeah, you know, I like what I made. He delight in it, and he invites us to delight in it too. Goodness, that takes time. I mean, to time is simply sit still and observe, be attentive. It's amazing what you see passing through. I did that for a couple hours last week in our backyard, and over a couple hour time span, I thought, oh, you know, I count over 16 species of butterflies, probably another 12 species of birds. You just see things passing through and you stop thinking, well, this monarch is on its way to Mexico on its migration. But you know, that takes time to simply watch, observe, reflect. And the same thing, you know, would apply with Scripture. I think it's helped cause us to reevaluate what is a good life consist of, or a well-lived life. Consuming, you know, things that we buy versus things that, I suppose you could say community relationships, not only with each other, but with the wider community, with creation. It's caused me to pay more attention to the connection of things, like where does food come from? How was it raised? Were the animals treated well while they lived, since they give their life that I might live? I become more attentive to that. In fact, my wife asked me to pick up some salmon about a week or two ago, and so I went to the store, and I decided off to, hey, where did the salmon come from? I never asked that before. And apparently it was farm-raised Atlantic salmon. Well, then I thought, Salmon Holman, there's a website called Blue Ocean Institute, I think, that has a terrific food guide that says, here are the different kinds of seafood that are raised, they're wild raised or raised well, so they don't have PCBs or any mercury or whatever. Well, the kind that I've been buying was like the worst possible kind. And they recommend sort of a wild caught salmon from Alaska, that it's not over depleted and so forth. So I went back and bought that. So I've become more attentive to that, to the ways we consume. You know, it doesn't make sense to buy something that's been designed simply to be thrown away, or something that can't be repaired. You know, how does that honor God's creation? So, I mean, everything we produce is remaking something that God has already made. So do we remake it in a way that honors his original creation, highlights its beauty? So I think we've gone to, you know, when we buy things, we use them until they wear out, not simply buy something new because it's in fashion, and to buy things that can be repaired. It's still kind of a work in process, I'll admit, Jessica, but it sort of does begin touching on a number of areas of one's life. When I think about stewardship, too, it's not simply, we can't think of stewardship simply in terms of getting something for the cheapest price. It's how do I take care of this item, how do I take care of that? It's fuller. It's so I might get something for the cheapest price. That may not necessarily have been good stewardship in terms of how it was produced, or what it took to produce it.
I was lucky enough to be a part of a Bible study that you led on this topic, along with some other young adults at a home Bible study. And one thing that I left that Bible study with was an increased sense of awe of the character of God as revealed in nature. Like, what I learned about God's character, you know, in nature, that he's an artist, he's a scientist.
Oh, I like that.
He cares about the physical. He made us to be physical beings as well as spiritual beings.
Right.
And I was wondering if you came away with anything like that in all of your research and study, something new about God that you discovered or realized.
Yeah, I think certainly the generosity of God would be one of those. The God is a God of abundance. I like your language of artistry. When you stop to think about the sheer diversity of his creation, it's like, wow. And the way things work together. So it does evoke a sense of mystery and awe. Sometimes I fear, and I think I've come to that realization, the more we live our entire lives within environments made by human hands, it becomes too easy to become, captivated by a sense of our own power, our own ingenuity, our own mastery of things. And the more we become captivated by that, the less we think of God.
Which is exactly the opposite of many people's fears about environmentalism. That instead of environmentalism turning us away from God and making us worship the things that God has created, it shows us how big and amazing and wonderful God is.
That's a great insight. And, you know, like what Psalm 8 talks about, what is man that you would give him the dominion over the works of man? You realize you gain a sense of humility, might be another way of putting it, a sense of humility when you're confronted with all of God's work. And a sense of thankfulness and praise. And so I think you could make the case that when we diminish, disparage, or destroy what God has made, we're also then losing that sense of humility, thankfulness, and praise for God's work.
I'd like to thank Dr. Arend at Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis for talking with us about his study of scripture in the area of environmentalism. If someone's listening to this and they're very interested in this topic and they want to read more of your research and what you've done, how could they get their hands on that?
Yeah, a number of things. First of all, our Commission on Theology and Church Relations is just published, Together with All Creatures, Caring for God's Living Earth. One can acquire that from Concordia Publishing House for the exorbitant price of $3.
Not bad!
It might even be available online, I'm not sure.
And I see a copy of it you have here with you. It's colorful, there's a picture on it. It doesn't look like other CTCR.
No, it doesn't, yeah, and that was by intention. I have a blog, Together With All Creatures, one could go on as well.
And what's the site?
Togetherwithallcreatures.com, I think it is.
There you go.